I don't know if you know this, but summertime is a time for summer camps, and Sweathead is going to run its third summer camp this July to August over 4 weeks. It's called the Sea Word Awakening from July 18 to August 10. We're going to focus on the four C's: consumer truth, cultural truth, competitive truth, and company truth. In the middle bit, the center bit, another C. And then we're going to give you a taste of comms planning as well. You're going to hear from Tassisopoulos from Wyden and Kennedy, Simone Pratt from Saatchi and Saatchi, Dylan Viner from Triptych, Jenny Chang, cultural strategist, Nick Susi from .. TBWA, Seth Gaffney from Preacher, Christina Pansaloni from Irico, Maria Van Busco from Media by Mother, Shane Rennie from Wyden and Kennedy, and me, Mark Pollard from Sweathead. For more details about how to join us in the Sweathead Strategy Summer Camp, go to sweathead.com. Your C-word awakening awaits. What's up and welcome to Sweathead with Mark Pollard. Today I have Ogilvy Pakistan's Zara Ali. Zara is director of strategy there. Does that mean that you're the boss of strategy there, or you're a strategy director?
Yeah, both. I have the title of strategy director and I'm the boss, yeah.
Some of these titles are a little bit confusing. I blame American HR. Zara is part of Ogilvy, and Ogilvy in Pakistan has been listed on the Effie Index. And this interview is part of a little series I'm doing, just trying to understand the way that some of the world's most effective agencies, how they think and how they work. So that's what we're going to do today. Yeah, you're in Karachi, Zara. Tell me a little bit about Karachi, and specifically, like, what's the advertising scene like there?
Karachi is really like the New York of Pakistan. It's the most happening city. It's not the safest to live in. For most professions, it has the most growth and most dynamic city, I would say, in that sense. The advertising scene also is the best in Karachi. We have other cities like Lahore and Islamabad that also have a bustling advertising scene. But in Karachi is where most of the head offices for the big agencies are. This is where you get most of the best talent here. But in terms of clients, it's kind of spread out through different cities. A lot of big FMCGs like Nestle, Coke, British American Tobacco, the likes of such are in Lahore. Telcos are all in Islamabad. So Karachi has a mix of clients like mid-size and big size. Client-wise, it's a little different. But in terms of talent, in terms of growth prospects, it's very promising.
How big is Ogilvy in Karachi? How many people work there?
We're about 40, 50 people.
And how many people work in strategy?
So in strategy, it really has been varying since I've been the boss, so to say. I've had teams of like 4 people, and now I'm down to 1 in Karachi and 1 in Lahore. This is the smallest team that I've had up till now. I have 2 planners when I'm looking at 3 cities, but I've also had like 4 or 5 planners throughout the 3 cities that I look at. So it really varies. But yeah, it's always been the smallest team in the agency.
We're going to later talk about the philosophy of Ogilvy and how your team works and what the secret sauce is, why you're winning all these awards. But let's start with something that you've won an award for. So you've got a campaign that's won 2 silver APAC Effies. Can you talk us through it?
Yeah, so there were basically 2 different campaigns that got us these 2 silver APAC Effies in different years. One of them is very close to me. Both of them are, but one of them just, I guess, as a woman, I'm proud of it also. It was called More Than Just a Cook. We were working for a culinary brand, a recipe mix brand. And this brand, business-wise, was stuck in a duopoly situation with its competitor. So no brand was getting a lead in the market. What we did was we wanted to find a very refreshing new insight for this brand and help it get that differentiation in the category that it needed. But the dilemma was that we had an old franchise of women who were loyalists to the brand, and we also wanted to get the new younger women to the franchise. So it was like, you know, you have to sort of cater to both segments. What we did, we just spoke to a lot of women, and we spoke to women online forums also anonymously, and we started exploring the stigmas and the tensions around our food culture. Food is a big, big passion point for Pakistanis, a huge passion point. But there's a lot of regressive attitudes attached to this culture. One of the biggest being that there's a very high expectation from women to cook really well. You know, it's a very simple thing. We've all grown up with it, and it feels just normal that, you know, if I'm good at this, if I'm good at that, I also need to be a great cook. That's just something that we're taught when we're young. When we explored this, we realized that for a lot of women, this was a very harsh judgment, and they felt that society, this is the only yardstick they're measured by. And if you're not good at this, nothing else matters. So a lot of women came up, you know, saying that if I'm a great wife or if I'm a supportive partner, it doesn't matter if I can't make this, if I can't make that. So there's a lot of judgment attached to your culinary capabilities. And that's where we found our tension that, you know, women are doing so much more, not just outside of the home, even inside the home, they're playing so many roles, but they're hardly recognized for that. So we centered our campaign around this, which is called More Than Just a Cook. We talked about the role of a woman in our society, inside the home, outside the home, being so multidimensional, and we just see her in one role. And the best thing about this was, kudos to the brand, we did talk to them about this, that, you know, it's almost like a societal thing for a brand to say, whose core audience is women. You rely on these women to use your product and make things from your product. They realized this, they acknowledged this, and they said, yeah, we want to say this. We want to take a back seat, sort of, and put the women in front and say this. And this is what will help us get the respect of women also. We knew that this was sort of a rebellious take for our culture. So we really layered the campaign in a very clever way. We hijacked colloquial expression, which a lot of men say to their wives. They say, what do you even do all day? We just put that expression on the billboards for like a week or two. And then we highlighted the different roles that women play. Then we used online in a separate way. We started reframing how women look at themselves. So we started women asking women, you know, what are those achievements that you're proud of? Forget whoever is proud of you or not, but what are those achievements that you personally are proud of? So we started that conversation online. And then TV, which is the biggest medium in our culture, we used that to tell this story about this old father cooking for his daughter who works at an office and she's late from work. So the idea over there was that, you know, for this change to happen, men need to chip in too. In a way, we were really sort of challenging this cultural complacency about the role of a woman. That's what got us all the attention, and brand differentiation grew by 17%. It affected sales also, but the main thing was that we could, you know, hit our differentiation targets.
What was the name of the brand and what's the product?
It's called Shan Foods. It's actually, this brand is present all over the world, in the UK, US. It has its presence in 70 countries. It's a homegrown brand. And the product was powdered recipe mixes.
What's that campaign? So trying to say more than just a cook, is that also trying to get people to realize that using a recipe mix is not letting yourself down, like it's not cheating? Is that also what's going on there?
No, that was a stigma years ago, that older women judge the younger women on using this shortcut. But we've grown, thank God, we've grown out of that problem.
Talk to me about the Ogilvy philosophy. How do you know if you're doing good work? What's the creative and strategy or strategic philosophy of Ogilvy?
It's a couple of things that always stick in my mind. A, David Ogilvy's quote is often used in our boardroom, we sell or else. So that's the first thing, that whatever creativity or in strategy and in the creative department happens, we have to, at the end of the day, be able to sell it, be able to convince the client. So I think it's less about what the client buys. It's more about, were you able to convince them or not? Were you so confident about your work? So that is something that really has been one of my principles. Then another thing about, you know, effectiveness. How effective is the work in terms of results? I'm not saying it's easy to be creative, but a lot of times creative is a lot of fun and it does a lot of things, but is it achieving those results or not is very, very important to us. I think creativity and effectiveness have been two sort of twin peaks, as we call it, for Ogilvy, and they go hand in hand for us. Another thing is more of a new mantra for us is borderless creativity, which means that we learn from each other, we take each other's help, we grow our own capabilities. And this borderless capability is also about how we see different mediums merging, you know, TV merging with e-commerce and print merging with out of home. So we just have this idea, which is growing in its shape and form, that creativity is really borderless and you really achieve good results when you can seamlessly find your way through it. These are some of the things that really come to my mind.
Do you think there's anything unique about the Ogilvy culture in your office or in Pakistan?
Yeah, definitely. The best example of that is all of the people who have left. And whenever I've met them, they honestly say that we haven't found a culture like Ogilvy again in whatever office they've been to. I think it's really down to very basic things of what makes any place great. Less politics. People are friendly with each other. People feel secure in voicing their opinions. I see a lot of new people also being able to say what they want or comment on something. And I think they just learn with the seniors around them that, you know, the idea is not to offend anyone. The idea is not to be rude. The idea is to say things in a manner that you're respectful with people, but you're also open and, you know, you're frank about it. I think that kind of openness, that kind of level of comfort that you can be yourself is really appreciated here. And there's a certain level of, I think, respect and openness in the air is what I would really call it. That you have to respect each other. You have to respect experience, expertise, or a fresh idea, but you can also be yourself, you know.
All right. Tell me how strategy works. Do you do a lot of primary research? Are you running workshops? Are you mostly collecting secondary research? How do you go about your work?
Every time a brief has come to me in all of these years that I've been at Ogilvy, every time we have gone out to the consumer and spoken to the consumer. That's something that I take very seriously, that you can't find everything online or through secondary data. Secondary data is good for academic reading, or, you know, maybe if you're checking Reddit out for conversations and stuff like that. For me, the process is generally about exploring the topic, the category with the people who are using it, and consumer, you have to talk to them. There is no bypassing that. So that definitely is the definite important part of the process. We generally design questionnaires, which are kind of, you know, a fluid discussion guide. I take that very seriously. You know, what are you asking? Because those questions are very important. And if you ask the right questions, the right answers come about. And then choosing those people are also very important. I guess as a planner, you can understand these nuances, that choosing the right people, whether it's few people, but choosing the right demographic, the right profile to talk to is very important. So I think the bulk of the work, or the most exciting things, I expect coming from that end. Apart from that, yes, we do study the category. We read reports, online reports on it. There's Euromonitor, there's Mintel. We have a lot of those kind of resources at hand. So understanding the industry, understanding the shifts in the industry, wherever there's the Harvard Business Review, there's the Guardian, there's, you just keep Googling the topic and you see what kind of publications are writing about it, what kind of opinion leaders are writing about it. So understanding the category, understanding the shifts in the category, understanding your competition, scanning your competition. Yeah, I spoke about the consumer. And yeah, it depends on the topic also at the end of the day. So if it's something that needs a different kind of approach to it, we would do that. I was telling you about this campaign that we worked on. We just went on this, you know, all women online forum that we have in Pakistan. And it's one of its kind. It has a huge following base. A lot of women can talk anonymously over there. So we just used that. We didn't talk to anyone in person.
For that one, is that a market research forum, or is it more just a women's only online community? Is it a website? Is it Facebook?
No, it's a community where women just discuss whatever they want to.
What did you do in that community? How did you approach trying to get into the community?
I was already in it. Everyone in Pakistan wants to be in it. First, it was sort of cool to be in it, but then it also grew because the kind of topics women are talking about, you can be open and you get a lot of advices and stuff like that. It's called Soul Sisters. But yeah, what I did was I just posted this question with my name on it because I'm a member. I just said, how do you feel about being judged for your culinary skills? How does it make you feel? Is there a judgment around it? And then the comments started flowing. So a lot of people do this. They ask questions and then people respond. Sometimes people share their personal stories also. So it's that kind of a place.
So did you really just post one question and mine the responses? Were you interacting with people to find out more? Did you probe?
Like, this was sort of, for this insight or this sort of tension was a hypothesis that we had reached with the client, that there is definitely judgment attached to, you know, women's cooking skills. Let's probe this further. So I was sort of trying to validate it, that are the women really angry about this? Is it a burning issue? And is it big enough to go after? So we already had this, we know that this is a problem, but we weren't sure if it's, you know, really something that presses buttons. I framed it like that to get validation and to get stories. So women started sharing their own stories and I wasn't interacting with them because I felt that this wasn't the place to interact. Let them just say what they want to, because it was very organic. So yeah, in this case, because I wanted validation and I just wanted the confidence that yes, a lot of women are facing this and they get what I'm talking about, I went about it differently. I had a different kind of problem. Maybe I would have understood it with different interaction and stuff like that.
I was just having a quick look at Soul Sisters, at least the Facebook group. There seems to be a lot of discussion about sexual harassment in public, as well as whether family members will accept people's husbands, wives, etc. Are they kind of two of the biggest topics that get discussed?
Yeah, actually, a lot of trauma and harassment stories are coming up now because I guess women just don't know who to take advice from. 4 out of 10 stories are definitely very dark. Then there's a lot of achievement stories, silly stories also that come up. But yeah, this forum definitely shows that women do not have enough channels and do not have enough access to the right resources.
Other than algorithms encouraging and surfacing certain kinds of content, give us a take on Pakistani culture right now. What's happening, especially for women?
There's two things here. There is your niche, I guess, 5% more emancipated, liberated women. I'm privileged to fall in the same category. So you see those and you feel that they're the same as from any developed country. They drive, they take their own financial decisions. They wear almost what they want to. They have the autonomy to make their own decisions. But the masses that you see are not as empowered. In that also, there's, you know, your upper middle class, your middle class, which is still evolving really fast. But the lower you go, there's very little autonomy that women get to make their own decisions, starting from how much they can study, when do they get married, who do they get married to, how many children will they have. Mostly, they don't have their own revenue streams. So they're entirely dependent on the men in the house. There's a huge unbanked population of women in Pakistan. So their role is still really glorified as a homemaker. And while there's no denying that that's a great role, but it can be played by men too, that awakening is not here. We just see our women in one box, which is, you know, you are the homemaker and the man is the provider. That is a very black and white way of how I'm putting it. It's changing for the younger girls. They are bringing in that change. But that's been the overall theme for the older women from my mother's generation. These ideals, I would say, are still glorified. And that is why you see a lack of exposure, a lack of access to things for women. But the issues will come, right? I mean, women will feel the need to talk, women will have their own problems, they will feel restricted by not having financial independence, they will feel judged for, you know, just being measured on their cooking skills. So those issues are definitely there. And that's what a forum like this does. It lets them breathe, it lets them talk.
Smart person. Hey, pull your mind out of those timesheets for a second and take a look at the Sweathead website. We have three membership levels, Starter Mode, Flight Mode, and Beast Mode. They give you access to a variety of strategy masterclasses, conferences, accelerators, and online learning, some of which has been known to make people cry because they like it, they like it, they feel seen. Make the most of your mind this year or any year and visit www.sweathead.com today. Now back to the interview. And also for people who aren't to speed with what's happening in Pakistan, I mean, I keep a little eye on it. We have some of our team over there as well in Quetta. Seems to be a lot of political turmoil year after year after year. Without trying to get you into trouble, could you like explain to us what's going on?
Well, right now it's very, very volatile. Our ex-prime minister was abducted from a court hearing. He's one of the most popular leaders in the youth right now. So right now, as we speak, there's a lot of turmoil and there's a lot of volatility in the country. We were just joking about this in the afternoon at work that I can tell you that I'm here in the first half. I don't know about the second half. No one knows what's happening in the second half. Right now, things are pretty volatile. Then there's, you know, the inflationary pressures where we've hit a record inflation in Pakistan. So political turmoil, economic situation is quite tough right now. But at the same time, life is going on, work is going on, you know. So it's also kind of surreal, right, like that, that we're planning things, we're doing things. We have a big presentation on Monday that we're working on. YouTube is not working right now over here. My mobile data is not working, but my internet at home is working. It's funny that you asked this question right now. It's very dystopian. But that's what I was thinking, that it's really interesting how life, on the other hand, is just going on. I think we've become used to living one day at a time. But still, you're looking ahead. I just got this big report from a research agency here in Pakistan that was talking to people and their sentiments. And it's very interesting to see that people were very worried about the economic situation and everything, but they were still very hopeful that, you know, things will change. The big leaders won't bring in the change, but we will bring in the change. So it's very interesting that hope is a factor, and maybe it's religion has to do with it also. Big majority is religious here, so maybe faith also comes in from there, and that resilience also comes in from there.
It sounds intense because there's also been natural disasters, floods and things like this, right? So how do you do strategy when all of that's happening? Do you acknowledge it in the work that you're doing? Do you pretend it's not happening? The stuff that you're working on right now, the campaigns that you're working on right now, will any of them acknowledge the turmoil that's going on?
I think there's two aspects to it that I've seen, like the inflation that I was talking about. Recession is going on around the world also. we've gotten a lot of briefs that talk about, you know, we're taking a price hike, we're reducing the grammage, we need to tell the consumer that we're still worth paying extra for. So a lot of briefs are coming with that context. And we do play on that context in the communication that, you know, compromises are being made, but I won't compromise on this, or this is something that is still priority for me. So there is a setting of that. But there are things that we don't talk about. So politics is what brands won't talk about. Religion is what brands won't talk about. And there's also, I feel, a certain level of reluctance that brands have, that they don't want to show or depict a gloomy picture. This is what I've heard from them in conversations, right? That, okay, things are really bad, but, you know, let's not go there. Let's not show them that side of it. To answer your question, the consequences that are coming out because of how we're living today, they are forcing brands to take action. They're forcing brands to create communication. But how many brands want to talk about it explicitly and how many don't varies.
It's just so, like, the turmoil is so intense. It's just every day. I mean, there are a lot of countries going through a lot of challenges right now, often because of, my words, not yours, often because of the powerful people trying to keep power within the family or within a dynasty and not wanting to let people in and so on and so forth. But then is there a risk that the advertising is just so disconnected from that day-to-day reality that it's kind of like, I don't know if you watched the movie The Truman Show, like a different kind of dystopia that advertising then portrays? Or is it a utopia that it's portraying? Like, does advertising that doesn't acknowledge what's going on even resonate?
My very personal opinion is that as a culture, we push things under the carpet. We don't acknowledge problems as much as they should be acknowledged. And that shows in our advertising also. So, you know, if you ask me how are things, even in research, when we talk to people and we probe, a lot of times people will keep on saying, oh, everything's good. Oh, everything's fine. Nothing's wrong. Everything's great. Everything's great. But you ask the question in a different way. You ask them that, you know, I'm really feeling the pinch these days. I'm not buying the cereal I used to buy. I've quit smoking or something like that. And then they'll be like, okay, yeah, I've also done that. So as people, we've been trained to sort of not air your dirty laundry. And in that respect, not really acknowledge the issues on a public forum. So I think that has been a part of our advertising too, to show a world which is almost like an escape and a happy world where everything is good. So that's mostly been the case. But I would say now things are changing in pockets, and there's some brands that are talking in a more real way. They're showing relationships that are more real. But yeah, to answer your question, it's not really depicted as it is.
I've never done strategy in a country that's majority very religious. How does that affect the work, if at all?
Well, you just don't go there.
You must nudge into it, right? Because obviously religions are a set of beliefs with certain values. You must have to play with the values without necessarily making the advertising seem religious, right?
I would say that the ideal with that is that I pick up those values and we talk about those values, right? For instance, if it's about being kind to people or if it's about giving charity. For me personally also, the values of the religion, of any religion, are universal good values. So you can still talk about those things without being overtly religious. Actually, there are brands, like there's Islamic financing in Pakistan. So there are brands who talk about religion and who sort of leverage religion, and they do it more explicitly. So that's fine. But you can't like question religion on a public forum. That's where we don't go. But acknowledging it or saying that, you know, our brand values align with the values of Islam is completely fine.
Tell me a little bit about hiring and keeping strategists in Karachi. What do you think strategists are looking for from agencies right now?
For a lot of talent in our market, the agency's name really matters, the brand name. What kind of images is associated with that. I was a junior planner for the longest time. I wanted to come to Ogilvy only because in my previous agencies, I was taught using Ogilvy decks and Ogilvy examples. So I'm just saying that kind of credibility of your name matters. Once that is there, I think the kind of work that you're putting out, everyone's looking at the work a lot these days. In fact, I've had people I've interviewed who've appreciated and criticized the work we're doing. And I love it when they have the courage to comment on our work, especially criticize it. I see young planners looking at what's being put out there, and they are quite charmed by the big names that you get to work on. So I think they're looking to make an impact themselves, and they want to be associated with the names that are churning out work, that are doing happening work. And then they're looking at culture as well. What kind of people work here? What kind of person will be my boss, who will I get to learn from them or not, those kind of things. But it's actually harder to retain people, I would say, when you said what strategists are looking for. I think the things that I mentioned, that's what they're looking for and they're excited when they come. But I'm seeing the span of consistently staying with an agency get shortened over time. I've had no planner leave for another agency. They're leaving for a master's. They're leaving to join a startup, to open their own. I've had 2-3 planners leave because they were starting their own startup. So that's very interesting for me. I was talking to someone in our region the other day that advertising really needs to be competitive as a profession. We need to be as attractive to retain young talent.
Yes, it's true. It's true. What do you think the industry could do globally, or at least in Pakistan, to become more attractive?
I mean, first, actually just have a very methodical thinking about this. I was actually thinking about what are they getting in those careers? Simply draw a list out. Apart from the money and all of that, you know, you have an idea and you get funding for it and you set it up. The kind of exhilaration and thrill that gives a person is very difficult to match, you know. I mean, I could give you the best account to work on. I could say that you'll win an award for it. That's probably the max that advertising can offer. A great account to work on, a great client, you know, someone who appreciates your work. It's also a question that I haven't been able to completely answer for myself, that how do we compete? And are we giving the same things that those professions are giving? Because there's also a lot of experimentation over there. You know, you do something, then you leave it, it's fine, you go somewhere else. In advertising, things are different. You try to build a rapport with your client, you try to work on, you know, prove yourself. Yes, self-expression is there, which is, you know, very important need for our younger audiences. Acknowledgement is there. But, you know, the toxic culture that is a part of advertising, sitting late hours, expecting that, you know, this is the norm here, things like those, we have to do away with that. I guess taking away the toxic part, really working on seeing what are those comparable things that we can offer to become attractive to as compared to other professions.
Yeah, there's also status. I mean, joining or starting a startup gives you a little boost. You can tell stories about it. It entertains or can impress other people around you. And I think advertising in many countries right now, the industry is just, it's not high status. It's people like, oh, that.
Yeah. And it's very interesting how the word status, the definition is also changing, right? Today, to a young person, it really doesn't matter if I'm director strategy, but the status of having done something by myself and launched a product by myself and found a new market for it. That is status today. A title is not a status. You know, there you see so many young CEOs today. It's very interesting how when you said status, it clicked in my mind that the definition of that is also changing. Titles are not so important today.
They are. Like the title founder is really important. I find that title, no offense if you're a founder, I find it entertaining because I'm like, at some point, aren't you just the CEO? Like, why do you have to keep calling yourself a founder? But that's because there's state. Oh, founder. Yes, I'm a founder of my own company. How many people work in it? Oh, just me. Okay, so you're a CEO?
No, in some ways, yeah, it's gotten also very superficial. Everyone's everything these days. That's also there. I agree with that.
Before we wrap up, could you take us through one more piece of work?
Sure. Another piece of work we did for the same culinary brand I spoke to you about earlier. This was when this brand was, you know, fighting with the same competitor, but the competitor was really rooted in traditions around food culture. And we wanted to take a very different take. We wanted to take a stance on progressiveness. We were looking for an angle and we found a very interesting, very unlikely angle. There was this conversation happening in Pakistan, everywhere, in every home, and on every TV show, everywhere. The strategic alliance Pakistan has with China, this, you know, CPEC that you must have heard about. So it's an alliance that affects us politically, economically, socially. That was the topic in literally everyone's home and everyone's office, and what will be the consequences of that. So what we did was to have a take on a progressive Pakistan and to sort of attract the progressive audience towards us. We took this conversation and we discussed and debated amongst ourselves. We talked about it, that what is beneath it and what is a common man feeling about it. So the tension that we discovered was that because of our colonial history, there's a lot of skepticism around what's happening. At the end of the day, we articulated it like that we're really skeptical that the Chinese coming into Pakistan makes us feel skeptical that they'll take over our culture one day. That was the skepticism in the air. And we tackled it with this idea that sharing something with someone else does not mean that you lose it. You know, we told this story through a Chinese woman who's just come to Pakistan and she's settled in with her husband, but she doesn't know the language. She doesn't know people. She doesn't know the food. But to make friends, she goes to the superstore and she buys the recipe pack and she makes the nation's beloved biryani. It's her favorite dish. It was just to show that, you know, this is a stranger who's trying to assimilate in your culture and they're as scared as you may be. So that idea came through that sharing your culture does not mean that you lose it. And she makes friends through that. So that whole angle of just showing a Chinese woman trying to perfect our culture, that film got a lot of attention and Indian Economic Times picked it up, CNN picked it up, and it was on Twitter for the longest time. So it was a lot of parodies and memes came out of that because no one had seen a Chinese woman cook our favorite dish.
That's bold. I like that. Awesome, Zahra. Well, if people want to find you on the internet, where are you most active?
Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter. I'm just silently active. I just read.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for sharing a little bit about Pakistan, Karachi, as well as Ogilvy in Karachi, Pakistan with us today. I look forward to seeing more of your award-winning work in the future.
Thank you very much. Pleasure being here.
Peace. Thank you for listening to this episode of Sweathead. If you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend, subscribe to our newsletter, find us on Instagram or LinkedIn at Sweathead. And if you're interested in finding out about our strategy, memberships, company training, or books, visit sweathead.com. Whoop, whoop.